From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, after a fiery State of the Union address, how El Paso is responding to President Trump, an update on the National Butterfly Center and the Wall, and the history of U.S. dependence on undocumented labor from Mexico. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. During President Trump's recent State of the Union address, he paid special attention to the state of the southern border.
I have ordered another 3,750 troops to our southern border to prepare for this tremendous onslaught. This is a moral issue. The lawless state of our southern border is a threat to the safety, security, and financial well-being of all America.
Trump presented another argument for building a wall, and he singled out life as he saw it in El Paso. He claimed that the Texas border city was once the most dangerous city in America, but after the construction of a border wall, it suddenly became super safe, which is a view that's not supported with crime statistics. Trump's remarks have not been warmly received by many people who live in El Paso, which might be something he'll learn when he goes to El Paso on Monday for a Make America Great Again rally. Protesters planned to greet the president, including one called March for Truth, organized by a group called Border Network for Human Rights. Fernando Garcia is the founder and executive director of the group.
It really makes us angry because he was using, and he is using, our city, our community, in a very distorted way. I mean, he essentially lied to the nation about the facts and about the reality of El Paso. So people got very frustrated and very angry.
So what is the truth? What do you want people to know?
Well, the truth is that first, El Paso has never been the most violent city in the nation. That is a false argument. But I think what is even worse is to say that due to the border wall, El Paso has been declared the safest city in the nation, safer than Washington, D.C., which, again, it is not true, and he is misleading the nation. The fact is that we start a very deep engagement process with local institutions, communities, immigrant communities, local enforcement since 2004, 2005. And since then, the index of criminality started going down in El Paso, to the fact that by 2006, El Paso was named the safest city in the nation. And since then until today, this year, I mean, El Paso has been up there, one of the safest cities. And the border wall construction, the so-called border wall, they started the discussions in Congress in 2006, and they started the construction of some border projects in El Paso in 2008, and they finished those projects by 2011. So the timelines were actually far apart from each other. So what he did is convoluted the two facts to say that because of the wall that didn't exist at that time, El Paso started becoming one of the safest cities.
So we have the truth of the statistics, but what about the truth of the character of the people that you know that live in El Paso and along the border?
It is not true that everybody that crosses the border or people that live at the border are criminals. That is a very bad generalization. I mean, we have communities working together. I mean, the fact that we have Juarez and other cities that we connect to in the other side of the border, we work in a very interdependent way. I mean, there's a lot of movement of people, goods, merchandise. There's a vibrant community, and we are very proud of what we are. So when he's presenting this idea that we live in chaos and mayhem, full with criminals, I think it only reflects his own racism, not only to immigrants, but to our communities at the border.
President Trump is now going to El Paso on Monday for a Make America Great Again rally. You were calling for a protest. What do you hope to accomplish with your protest?
Stop the lies and to stop the border wall. I mean, I think both of them actually go together. He's going to come and he's going to keep promoting his lies and his distortions about our community, and that is unacceptable. And what you will see is that thousands and thousands of people coming together. I think there's going to be a historic mobilizations in El Paso because people, it is upset about how he's denigrating our community, but also he has used us to actually make the case for a absurd, ugly, racist, xenophobic border wall and all of the agenda that is behind that border wall, which essentially entails family separation, deployment of active soldiers within our communities. So we're going to see two things. One of them is we're going to present our community of what it is, that we're proud of being El Pasoans, that we have many challenges, but we are working together. But at the same time, that we will reject that essence of that agenda that is nothing else but vitriol and racism.
Do you think it's no accident that Donald Trump is planning this great Make America Great Again rally in El Paso at this particular time? And do you think that he is counting on a very enthusiastic protest against him to create images that would support the story that he tells about the border?
It is very important what you say. But I believe you would be upset if you know that your children are dying in detention, or if your families are being separated, or if ICE is going into your houses and taking your parents away. So what else we can say? What else we can do to actually show that we disagree to that? I mean, this is not only a political disagreement. We don't care about whether he's going to run or not. This is not a political issue for us. This is an existential issue for our communities. It is about how our communities are being not only damaged, but also their human and civil rights deeply violated by this president.
This protest will create negative optics for, you know, moving forward.
This is going to be a peaceful demonstration. And what you will see is families coming together in El Paso. You will see children reinforcing the American dream. That America and the border is not what Trump is talking about.
Fernando Garcia is the founder and executive director of the Border Network for Human Rights. They are planning a protest for President Trump when he arrives in El Paso on Monday for a Make America Great Again rally. The National Butterfly Center near Mission, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley, is a flashpoint for new border wall construction. Despite the inability of President Trump to secure new funding for a border wall, Homeland Security is pushing forward with a plan to build 25 miles of concrete barriers along the flood control levees in Hidalgo County along the Rio Grande. This would cut off once protected wildlife habitat lands from Texans, and that could include the Butterfly Center. I spoke Friday morning with Mariana Trevino Wright, the center's director.
The construction equipment has been moving through our property and is set up and working on the fish and wildlife tracks to the west of us. There are two tracks, El Murillo Banco and La Parida Banco, and the habitat desiccation has begun.
That's federal property that's being bulldozed and preparations are being made for wall construction there. So wall is being built now.
Yes. They're removing the habitat, all of the trees and everything that they need to clear in order to move in the excavators and you know, the dump trucks and start doing the dirt work.
And this is federal land that was set aside for species protection.
Correct. These are properties in the North American Butterfly Association section of the Lower Rio Grande Valley Wildlife Conservation Corridor.
What does that mean for your mission of being able to habitat for butterflies and other wildlife?
Well, it means that this area that represents a remnant of native habitat is going to be diminished, not only in size, but in productivity and viability, and negatively impacted by the bifurcation of the property, the elimination of regular routes for wildlife to range and breed and feed. And it's also going to have this all-night blitzkrieg lighting that will harm wildlife as well as the plants in the floodplain for that lighting. It will basically condemn all terrestrial life on the south side of the wall to death in the event of another flood. We regularly have flood events here on the banks of the Rio Grande River. And they're building the wall over 2 miles inland here in our section. So just the our property, El Morillo, between us and Benson State Park, and the Benson State Park property, the three of us will have 3.35 square miles of U.S. soil that is now south of the border wall in a no man's land that my boss is calling Mexigro.
And what does he mean by Mexigro?
Well, this land that is now south of an arbitrary new barrier, which creates a boundary on the southern border to the U.S., that land that's south of that is now effectively ceded to Mexico.
You mentioned the Benson State Park. Have you heard if the state of Texas is going to just allow that park to be walled off?
Well, I think the deafening silence on behalf of Texas Parks and Wildlife and Governor Abbott and others, our local representatives and others, attest to the fact that they are just going to let it go. They've kept the threat to it under wraps. There's been no transparency concerning it. They don't want any information out, and the employees were reminded that they are not allowed to speak to the media or the public concerning it. So yes, they're green lighting this.
The wall builders, the Homeland Security, they have targeted your land as well. You have caught them on your land without permission, taking measurements and putting in markers. What's the status of you being able to protect your land from an unwanted wall?
Well, actually, we caught the contractors on our land July 20th of 2017 with no permission and no notice and no legal action. They were cutting down our trees, eliminating brush, and widening a road. When we confronted them and wanted to know who they were and what they were doing here, they said the government sent them to do that work ahead of the border wall. That was more than 9 months before any congressional vote or appropriation authorizing border wall construction. We filed suit against the federal government on December 7th, I believe, 2017. And in more than a year, we have not had any action or any response from the court or the judge in response to our lawsuit. It has been buried, squashed, ignored. It is languishing. We have been denied our day in court.
I read y'all were filing an injunction.
Yes. Our attorneys are in the process of doing that.
And what are you trying to prevent from happening?
Well, when border wall construction began in the lower Rio Grande Valley almost 10 years ago, the government built wall on land they had not seized, that they had not taken possession of legally. And we are trying to make sure that that does not happen again, and certainly that it does not happen to us.
And how do you feel about the way things are going right now? Are you uneasy as you look around you and you see literally the walls closing in?
very uneasy. And since funding for this border wall was appropriated in the March 2018 Consolidated Appropriations Act, we really don't have any hope that we will not be subject to border wall. But we do still have rights, and we are going to do everything within our power to make sure that the Constitution applies to us and this administration is not able to simply roll over the National Butterfly Center.
Mariana Trevino Wright is the director of the National Butterfly Center, which is in the Rio Grande Valley in Hidalgo County. The United States has a long history of depending on labor from Mexico, whether it be legal or illegal. South Texas agriculture and industries across the nation have been available to undocumented workers for over a century, and during that time, the Border Patrol and attitudes about the border have shifted depending on circumstances. Christina Salinas writes about the history of flexibility at the southern border in her new book, Managed Migrations: Growers, Farm Workers, and Border Enforcement in the 20th Century.
Issues of migration and then also lack of access to full inclusion into the nation. Yes, those issues have been characteristic of immigration policy and approaches to the border throughout the 20th century. What I focus on in the book is the way in which the realities and dynamics on the border, which was a desire and a need for labor, how they interacted with Border Patrol and federal authority and their mission along the border, and how that sort of interaction was very contested or very complicated, but it happened all the time. And those kinds of interactions is what shaped, it was this constant negotiation, and those interactions is what has shaped the political dynamics of the border in the present day. And that was not always quite understood in Washington.
Well, because if the Border Patrol were to perform the way that it was expected by Washington, D.C., then labor would be cut off. It would be difficult to actually have the economy that the United States wants to have.
Yes. I mean, the local economy along the border and, of course, some of these dynamics have now become more national, was very dependent on undocumented labor. And the situation is even a little more complicated in that often local farmers or growers had a lot of political power. So they were able to influence Washington quite a bit. And they had, very important political connections. So yes, if the Border Patrol acted in the way in which it was intended to, or was created to somehow strictly enforce immigration law, that would have greatly changed the economy along the border, and it would have, been a completely different proposition.
Because the nation is very much dependent upon labor coming up from Mexico.
Yes, it has been very dependent on that on Mexican workers throughout the 20th century. That's been a feature of the border, and so yes, the nation has been very dependent. Many industries have low-wage labor in the form of Mexican workers coming across the U.S.-Mexico border has formed the backbone of many of these industries, and you see it reflected of what I describe is in agriculture, but of course in the more contemporary time you see it reflected in many other kinds of industries.
Like poultry plants.
Poultry plants, construction.
Hospitality industry.
Yes.
Dairy.
Yes.
Pretty much where there's a need for hard physical labor, the margins are pretty tight, they're looking for cheap labor. They're going to turn towards labor that came up without documentation.
Yes, I mean to exploit the labor because workers have to work for cheaper wages, and they don't have the protection of they don't have protections because they are undocumented.
And in turn, the United States benefits from that with cheaper housing, cheaper food, dependable resources.
Right. So the United States has benefited from the labor of these workers with, yeah, cheaper housing, cheap food. That's a big one. So the economy in whole has benefited from their labor. And these workers have built helped build many of these industries.
Many people in the United States who are part of this discussion about the future of the southern border and what to do about border security in that building a massive wall are informed with a fantasy about Fortress America. They see the nation as this sort of castle-like fixture, and that if we don't have this hardened southern border, then we don't have a nation at all. That's sort of the rhetoric that we hear.
Mm-hmm.
And you build a case about that we actually have a flexible border in which it hardens and softens depending upon the labor needs of the nation at the time.
Right. So I build the case that has been characteristic of the U.S.-Mexico border, so that it has allowed Mexican labor to cross the border, but there are officials, border authorities still there to in some ways manage it, and workers have not been allowed full access to the nation in terms of the benefits of citizenship or access to citizenship, so that they have remained in some ways flexible and deportable. And there have been many instances in history in which, you know, you have big deportation campaigns. Yes, the U.S.-Mexico border has been, rather than a fortress, quite flexible, allowing migration to come in, but always that migration being those workers being with the ability to be deported. And so
Christina Salinas is a professor at the Center for Mexican-American Studies at the University of Texas at Arlington. Her new book is Managed Migrations, Growers, Farm Workers, and Border Enforcement in the 20th Century. It's published by the University of Texas Press. The immigration debate has prompted a surge in the use of words we didn't used to hear quite so much, words like caravan or asylum. Words matter. Words are loaded with meaning, associations that could denigrate and fail to communicate. In her commentary, Texas Public Radio contributor Yvette Benavides gives us a lesson in semantics.
Semantics is the study of meaning in language. Sense, reference, and logic are aspects of meaning. When you consider semantics, you look at the shades of meaning of a certain word. The denotation or dictionary definition of the word bachelor, for instance, is a single man. But the word is loaded with implications, connotations of a player, a guy who can't settle down for being a confirmed bachelor. In English, we don't have a word for a single woman, bachelorette being reserved for a woman who is single but about to get married, someone with a ring on it, as it were. And then the single woman who isn't on a Vegas girl's weekend is relegated to a fate as a spinster, an old maid, but not a confirmed bachelorette who happens to be single. Considering semantics leads to more serious and even contentious questions around word choice. Last month on Meet the Press, the NBC flagship Public Affairs Sunday show, Tom Brokaw, the veteran television anchor, in a panel discussion on immigration said that, quote, Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. Full disclosure, I'm Hispanic. I'm an American of Mexican descent. Mexico is a Spanish-speaking country. I speak Spanish. I was born in the United States. I don't need to work harder at assimilation. Hispanic has always been a prickly term, even given its ubiquity in the media, government documents, and in popular quotidian usage. Many don't like the implications of the word. Not all Spanish speakers from countries where Spanish is spoken are alike. It's a census term, not really one that denotes anything at all about a person and where they're from. Does the label Latina or Latino or Latinx cover it then? Sure, if that's the word a person chooses to use for him or herself. And are those people immigrants who need to assimilate? Hard to say. Maybe, maybe not. And that's where Brokaw's problem lies. He used a broad stroke that typifies those in the media, the government, and elsewhere who generalize and, worse still, judge or stereotype. He's conflating the terms Hispanic with immigrant or Honduran or Guatemalan or Mexican, but also Mexican-American. But by doing so, he's evoking the image of candidate Trump calling Mexicans rapists and criminals. That might seem like a leap, ostensibly, but consider Brokaw's words. He said, Hispanics need to assimilate. That clearly shows that he believes that Hispanics are immigrants, part of the caravans, part of the group seeking asylum and being promptly deported or jailed, or if they are children of a tender age, stripped from their parents and caged. Brokaw, because he was not careful with his words, asserted that Mexicans and others from Spanish-speaking countries are undesirable in the United States unless they can somehow be more American. I'm Hispanic, and I reached that end goal of American when I was born, right here in Texas, on land usurped from Mexico in 1848. Before this gaffe, Tom Brokaw said that when Americans talk about the subject of immigration, they say things like, quote, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies, adding that, quote, intermarriage that's going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other are a problem. Hasn't been a problem for me. I'm not a bachelorette. And aren't so very many of us a mix of cultures. Brokaw went on the defensive, claiming himself a misunderstood victim in a burst of poorly written tweets that seemed to defy the strange logic of his own prescriptive assertions that Hispanics, quote, ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their kids are learning to speak English. Brokaw's long been a champion of the greatest generation of World War II he helped shine a light on in a series of books and documentaries in the early aughts. All of the wars of the 20th and 21st centuries have been fought by those who gave all, including Hispanics, many of whom are highly decorated war heroes. The plain truth is that Hispanics can be immigrants, Hispanics can be Americans, they can be both or not. If Brokaw's really sorry for what he said, he didn't say what he really means. Semantics. That's the issue. Brokaw's stark carelessness might or might not speak to an attendant bias or prejudice. But how is it that he can have such a lax attitude about his words, but not about the words, in English or Spanish, of others? And he isn't alone in this superiority, admonishing immigrants in America. When he and others in the media use terms like caravans and walls, they're imposing again their own privileged moral imperative about perceived threats to the kind of America they want. They're not brown America. Caravan started out as the denotation for a group traveling by camel or pack animal on the Silk Road. Traders traveling across Asia, Africa, and Europe. The word's taken on other shades of meaning, traveling by van, for instance, or traveling in a convoy, but the word still retains that shade of meaning of someone, a foreigner, entering a space where he's temporary, passing through, but still mysterious, different, an outsider. Caravan, then, is a pretty loaded connotation for those seeking asylum for a variety of reasons, from gang violence to domestic abuse to abject poverty. Trump's called immigrants from Mexico rapists, a wholesale indictment of people who are different from him, who speak Spanish, who are brown and poor. Somehow in this egregious and wild indictment, the apprehended tender-age children are criminals. Under George W. Bush, Homeland Security set about to build a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. Semantics. Today the word is wall. Sometimes it's the wall or just wall. Sometimes Trump calls it a beautiful wall, because for him, it holds back all those Hispanics.
Yvette Benavides is a professor of English and creative writing at Our Lady of the Lake University. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can listen to past Texas Matters episodes, and you can download us wherever you get your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.